Well, this is our last talk of the session, and it happens to be me. I'm Tim Reinhart from the USDA, the Southern Horticultural Laboratory, and I'm going to spend just a few minutes talking about blueberries. Why me? Why blueberries? There's a story behind it. I won't get into it. I've only been doing blueberries for a year. Before that, I worked on woody ornamentals. The Southern Hort Lab has been breeding blueberries for 40 years, so there is a legacy conventional breeding program there. But we had some scientists, myself included, that are now part of the blueberry program. These are geneticists, and our main goal in expanding this program is to increase phenotyping. The emphasis on this expansion is environmental tolerance, so we're talking about drought, pH tolerance. And so the main goal of adding these new scientists is to increase the ability to phenotype these plants, either in vitro or in a seedling stage, and incorporate those tools into the conventional breeding program. Now, as part of that, obviously, there's more. There's a genomics component, which is what I'm going to talk about today. And there's also a marker component, a genetic, marker-assisted selection. I'm not going to get into that so much. I'm trying to avoid it, actually. There's a reason I'm trying to avoid it, and that's because rabbit-eyed blueberries, which is the blueberry species that we're focusing on, is a hexaploid. We're focusing on these rabbit eyes, though, because these natural populations occur in the Gulf Coast region, and they have some of the traits, these environmental tolerance traits, that we think we're interested in. So I'm not sure how much you guys know about blueberries. There's several different types of blueberries that are grown commercially. Rabbit eyes in the southeast are one of the types grown commercially, but I think most of what you see in stores is a southern high bush or northern high bush. The other thing with rabbit eyes that you can call positive or negative, depending on how you look at it, is they come from a very narrow genetic base. So the five cultivars I'm talking about, Premier, Tiff Blue, Powder Blue, Climax, and Austin, I know this is very confusing, they're really derived from the same four wild collected parents. And pretty much all of these things, the old rabbit eyes, are derived from these four wild collected parents. So there is some evolutionary questions that we could maybe answer farther down the line. How did rabbit eyes come into existence? Why are they hexaploid? Are there diploid or tetraploid progenitors out there? Is this allopolyploid, multiple genomes coming together, or were these hexaploids that have diverged into these separate populations? We think in the genomics component we might actually be able to get at some of this, but like I said, that's not our main focus. But it is something that we think is useful, understanding the rabbit eye genome, and certainly as we move into any sort of marker-assisted selection, this plays a huge role in the genetics of how you deal with that. So these are some of the, I'm just going to go ahead and throw the results right out there in case I go long. We don't think it's a cryptic polyploid. We don't see any evidence for that. We don't have a physical map. I think that's underway. But so right now we're going to operate under the assumption that this is an autopolyploid. So basically, Corymbosum, which would be this high bush, was the progenitor, and it was some unreduced gamete that made this a long, long time ago. This is convenient. Obviously, if we assumed it was an allopolyploid, we'd be creating lots of problems for ourselves. But what I'm going to talk about today is the genes, the genomics component. We think we can identify candidate genes for some of these pathways for drought, pH tolerance, mostly homology to other crops. There's so much of this information available, but also we've generated our own, transcriptome. So our little de novo assembly, and there is a reference genome. So I don't have the reference genome, but I'm going to show some work that was done with it today. So I think the answer to all these is yes. We can find the genes that we think are going to be involved in these pathways. We've identified them. And then we want to look at the expression of those genes, and the question was, can we do this just with our transcriptome data? Are we going to need to use the reference genome? The reference genome was made from a diploid, Corymbosum, and we're working on Vaccinium virginum. So, are we actually going to be able to use this for? And I think the answers are all yes to those. These species designations sometimes are not don't mean a whole lot at the genetics level. So I've had a lot of coffee, so I'll more than make up for time here. The tissues we have collected, we have put in the freezer just about every developmental stage that we were able to identify. So we have bud, we have leaf at different stages, we have the emerging leaf, we have immature leaves, we have mature leaves, we have all the floral stages that we could delineate with some reasonable accuracy, and then of course all the fruiting stages. So we're what I presented earlier, we're interested in environmental tolerance, but obviously, especially for the strawberry breeders that were here earlier, the important components, especially as Louise pointed out, is really the marketability of this crop. So we're talking about sugars, we're talking about color. We think as we move forward into this, the genomics could play a role in some of that. So we have all the fruit stages all the way through ripe fruit. So this is preliminary data. I'm only going to talk about three of the stages that we've processed so far. This is a total RNA, extraction, ribo-zero. And we're running it on a MiSeq that was gifted to us as part of this rearrangement in programs. So there's two things we're doing with this. We generate the sequence data. We were going to do our own assembly and then look at, as much of the functional components as we could, blast to go, see what candidate genes we could identify. Then we were also interested in the, possibility for RNA-seq. I was, initially just going to talk, I was not going to talk about gene expression. Originally, I was just going to put up a bunch of those descriptive slides about the transcriptome because they're kind of fun, I guess. They're a little difficult to make. Anybody who's ever processed this sort of data, when you get into, how do you put it on a slide, 24,000 genes, how do you talk about them in a functional way? The only thing I want to say is that this data is really not based on biological replicates at this point. So we have tissues in the freezer. It's not based on treatments. We have treatments, so we have drought-stressed plants that we've collected the same tissues from, plants under grown at different pHs. And then, we have five genotypes. Because we don't have that, we don't have a real robust picture of the transcriptome, so I actually decided not to talk so much about that and more about the possibility of looking at gene expression. And when I wrote the abstract, this work wasn't done, but I really want to point out this is Anne Lorraine, who did all of this work. She was very helpful, and this is my credit to her, even though she didn't make it on the abstract. And the blueberry reference genome that she's going to use, that really came out of an SCRI grant. I think it was Jeannie Rollin that wrote the grant or headed up that group, and then it was Alan Brown that put together the draft. I think the draft was supposed to be published. I haven't seen it actually, so hopefully it'll be out in the future. But Anne Lorraine has access to it, so she was the one that took our reads and mapped them to the reference genome. And the genome she's using is the May 2013 draft. So the good news is, if you take these rabbit eye, genes or reads and put them against the corambosum diploid genome, we're getting decent coverage here. We're talking about 44% of the genes in the diploid draft genome we picked up in our transcriptome. That's probably really terrible if you're working with the same species or for other crops, but for us, working on rabbit eyes, this was exciting. I think we are going to be able to use the draft genome very well. When you look at sort of the gene expression in our samples, and of course this annotation is based off the draft genome, but you can do the annotation off our transcriptome. It comes up basically the same. We are picking up the genes that we expect to see. So in an emerging leaf, these are the top 10 most abundant, I shouldn't call it gene expression because there's no statistics on it, most abundant genes in this emerging leaf. Almost all of them are photosynthesis related. That's exactly what we expect to see. Same thing with this really immature green berry. This is really photosynthesis related. And then for the bud, there's a whole set of genes that are hypothetical. And this is actually expected. So if you go in and look at these genes where most of this annotation took place, they're picking up these genes in the buds of various other organisms. So there's a whole suite of genes out there that apparently we don't know much about in buds, but we're seeing it consistent across the different genomes. So I think we're in really good shape in terms of actually running gene expression experiments on these hexaploid rabbit eyes and using the draft genome, the diploid Vaccinium corymbosum, as our our assembly. And the expression levels were decent, so I think we're going to see, hopefully, the types of differential expression that we want to see in these different treatments. Like I mentioned, the coverage was low. That could be because of the diploid and the hexaploid and two different species. I will go ahead and say it might be because I'm terrible at making libraries. Or it may be, and I'll just throw this back at Dr. Brown, the reference genome might be somewhat incomplete. Now, I am very aware that this auto versus allopolyploid could be playing a very strong role in this. So the idea is that we'll do the differential expression probably both ways. We'll use the draft genome and then hopefully use our own transcriptome in case we're missing genes from the draft genome. And we haven't run anything yet, so I don't have any data for that. And then I should also point out that Jeannie Rollin has put, 15,000 contigs. There's other transcriptomes out there. We could actually pool those together and make a super transcriptome if we wanted to. And we'll probably use that for some of the work, for the gene expression work. And that's really where my part of this program is going. So in terms of the treatments, this is a hydroponic setup for rabbit eye, so we can grow them in very controlled pHs. Which is great. And when we do the phenotyping, we're really interested in the leaves, right? So it's something that we can visually identify in a seedling stage. But for my work, we're more interested in gene expression in the roots. So the way we think this is happening is the roots are exuding something to change the pH ions or whatnot. So there's a little bit of a difference. And then we also have an in vitro system that we hope to get up and running to maybe look at this in a little more detail with gene expression in the roots. Drought tolerance, sort of different. It's taking place in the roots, so we have this set up with an inert media so we can really control the drought or how much stress we give them. We're interested in the leaves, so we really think this isn't root architecture or something involved in that. It's probably stress detection. That's what we're thinking at this point, how fast they can respond to it and close their stomates and things like that. So that picture there, that's a plant that's undergone drought stress for, that's all the way at the end of the treatment. So it's wilting, it's suffering, and we're really interested in the expression in the leaves. So this signaling pathways is what we're focused on here. You just cannot make sequencing data without talking about markers. So last slide. We did find a bunch of microsatellites in there. We have run them. We do see, for a hexaploid, we're picking up in some loci 6 alleles. So, we could look at these and look at some of the other species that are native to the area and maybe have more information on this allo versus auto tetraploid and things like that. So they are available. And I should point out, once you have this equipment, and we do, we may go ahead and just do some genomic sequencing with the MiSeq and the cost, and you can run the numbers. It's really not that bad at this point. We could sequence two parents and then do some of this marker work sort of in silico on computationally. So that's one of the ideas we're also kicking around. So with that, I just really want to acknowledge Anne Lorraine's contribution to this. Any questions? I think we have 0 seconds. Thank you. Well, I should say that concludes fruit breeding, session 1. So thank you all for attending, and I hope to see you around the conference.